CGM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CGM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CGM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CGM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA Windsor on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, Jess Lewis will be giving us an update on her Paralympic training efforts. So tell me a little bit about your latest training efforts.
So I competed in Dubai in February, which was the first race of the season for me, which is always filled with a lot of nerves, but it was a great experience, great way to know kind of where I am going into the season. And then I just got back from a three-week training camp in Florida. I was very fortunate that the Canadian team let me tag along with them, so that was a lot of fun to be out on a track in the sunshine and get some trail sessions in as well.
So, do you find when you travel that the communities are generally geared to accessibility, or do you have to make some adaptations depending where you train?
No, I think overall it's pretty great when we go to these places. I think we also kind of do a little bit more research into, you know, which hotels or houses would be accessible and just kind of make it as smooth as possible.
So what was the experience like traveling with a team of similar ability to athletes and watching them develop into their practices?
Oh, it's absolutely amazing to be able to travel with such a big team, just because for me, coming from Bermuda, currently I'm the only one that's in para-athletics, so any chance I get to be with other athletes in the same sport is absolutely phenomenal. And the first part of the camp, because there was two separate camps, was also with some able-bodied athletes as well, so it was definitely awesome to kind of hear a little bit more of their stories and their experiences of competing for Canada, and then for us to kind of talk about, you know, our experiences being on the para side.
So, last time you were on the show, you mentioned you were getting ready for the next Paralympic Games. So what steps have you taken in that direction?
So the next Games will be in August, September next year. So this year, we're really focusing on two major competitions that can provide an opportunity to qualify for the Paralympic Games. So the first one is World Championships, which will be in Paris in July, and then Pan American Games, which will be in Chile in November. So those are kind of the big races that we're targeting this year and hope to be peaking at those times.
So, must be kind of amazing getting a chance to see so many different perspectives on accessibility and so many different places. being part of such a great team.
Yeah, absolutely. And, everywhere has, totally different experiences and cultures and that kind of thing. So it's really cool to have those opportunities to travel and to see that. And, even maybe just to leave a little bit of a legacy where you go and kind of be an advocate for the changes that maybe do need to be made moving forward for those countries too.
So in that sense, for some of the spectators, seeing someone competing in such a cool and relatable way, it's got to be an eye-opening experience.
Yeah, absolutely. But it definitely is awesome for them to kind of get an eye-opener into the world of Ferrisport. And, I think when I first started, a lot of people didn't really realize that I had a racing chair that was separate to my day chair. So I think that's kind of a really big thing that is an eye-opener, as well as, we do get up to some pretty fast speeds, and kind of in that way it's an eye-opener as well.
That's the thing about disability sport. It's just as intense, if not more so, than the able-bodied equivalent. Not sure everyone recognizes that right offhand, but actually seeing it or being a part of it very quickly change that perspective, I would imagine.
Yeah, definitely. And, when I talk to people about, training 6 days a week, they're like, oh, wow, like we didn't really expect that that was part of it. And, that's definitely a great way to bring more awareness of parasport and, the hard work that does go into it.
So, in your recent travels, has there been anything, any success that stands out for you?
Yes, in Dubai, I had a little bit of a slow start, just getting used to my new racing chair in a race format, but I ended that with a personal best time in the 400 meter, nice. So I was very excited about that. So we kind of know that we're heading in the right direction, it's still early in the year, so I'm definitely a little bit more confident in the racing chair and kind of the changes that we've made. Moving forward.
So from an athlete's standpoint, when you set a personal best, does that become the new standard? Say, this is what I've done at the low end, let's see how much farther I can push this.
Yep. I mean, you're always striving to better yourself each and every time you're hitting the track. And it's definitely a great confidence boost, going into the season, knowing that, hey, I can still go a little bit faster. I'm looking forward to trying to get, faster times in my other events as well this season.
So what's the ultimate goal? If you had a chance to achieve at any level you wanted to, what would you want to do?
Definitely the ultimate goal is to make the podium at a Paralympic Games. But I kind of try not to focus on that solely and just focus on the work that needs to be done in order to get there, and just take it kind of one competition at a time, and make sure that I'm making those changes that I need to in order to stay competitive and stay healthy in the sport.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure.
In this segment of our show, Jeff Thiessen will be giving us an update on his parasport work.
Terrific.
So what's the latest with your parasport work?
Yeah, we've, as always, Cam, we have lots on the go. The big project right now that we're leaning into is what we're calling the Niagara Parasport Festival. We did one in 2019 at the beginning of Ontario Trillium Foundation funding for our work in the Niagara region, and it's culminating now with another festival. So it's a 2-day event. It's in Font Hill, just kind of the heart of the Niagara region. It's 2 days. The first day is what we're calling Education Day, and it's exclusively for secondary students, high school students, teachers, teachers' assistants. And we've got a great lineup of keynotes, workshops, and probably the highlight for most of the kids will be what we call our sport arena, our sport demo arena. And we'll have about 20 different adaptive sport and activities being hosted by those with expertise in them from across the province, really, and also locally here in the region. So you name it. You and I have talked about wheelchair basketball. That will be there, sitting volleyball, bocce, the rowing demonstrations, on it goes. And to some interesting ones, too, like circus arts. There are a couple of programs here in Niagara that welcome folks with disabilities, and they have an adaptive, I guess you could say, training adaptive program. So that's great.
So
put that phone ringing. And the second day is for the community. So it's general public and also a focus on municipal leaders. So we've got mayors, we have parks and rec managers, we have seasonal staff, students that are working in camps and other kind of activities and programs for the 12 different municipalities. So yeah, it'll be a full couple of days, and we're really excited about it. So we always looked at the work out here in Niagara as creating, I hate to say blueprint, because that doesn't necessarily overlay or scale to every region of the province, but we've learned a lot of things, you know, good, bad, and indifferent in our time working here, and I think those are great things to share for other municipalities across the province to learn from and how to start a league. We talked about the Niagara Sledge Hockey League in the past that we've created. How to engage municipalities, how to put on a festival. So exciting stuff right now.
So I'm thinking that, especially for any smaller municipalities, having people come together from different regions might be some people with disabilities' first real exposure to the world of parasport and seeing for the very first time that there is an option for them. Any thoughts on this?
Yeah, you know, there's a layer to that question that is important to us. So these 20 different sports or activities that we're showcasing, in the past, different what we call triad or tri-me sessions, there hasn't always been a pathway for people that come and participate in those in their community to pursue. And that's a caveat for anyone that's been invited, is that there has to be an opportunity for someone to pursue that sport or activity right here in the region. You know, we talk about, you know, we don't want to dangle a carrot, get somebody excited about sledge hockey, for example, but sledge hockey doesn't exist, which it does, but just using that as an example. So yeah, it's certainly opening eyes and minds to what's possible, what's available, and that's the key for us too. What's available for you to do.
So I take it the festival itself would allow for potentially family members of people with disabilities to attend and maybe learn and bring the information back. I mean, someone first dealing with an injury, for example, and hesitant to get out in the community, families can still attend, gather some info, I'd imagine.
Yeah, 100%. That's a big part of it, and we're working through the disability organizations in the region, enlisting their help to share the news that the festival is happening with their memberships. And it goes beyond that, too. I mean, families are very important in being those information gatekeepers, you might say, but also occupational therapists, recreational therapists, PTs, you know, the healthcare industry, or profession, PSWs, prosthetists. As me as an amputee, you know, I can learn from my prosthetist what's available. So yeah, it's about connectivity, connecting different sectors that should be working together. We hope with the festival there's that information to share and to refer and connect.
So do you see this as a long-term project, something you'll want to do year to year to keep people engaged?
Yes. We don't, with our grant wrapping up here in Niagara, we have for the last year or so talked about what's the legacy or the sustainability. You know, we don't want to pull stakes on the tents and roll out of the region. We still want to be that go-to here as a source for expertise, for lived experience, resources. So, yeah, we will remain that here in the region. But as I talked about that scaling of the festival, now we have our sights set on other regions that could benefit from what we've learned and come and do something like this in other parts of the province. So that'll be the true legacy of this festival, is that I don't say travel and roadshow, but it will have application in other communities that need it, for sure.
So I'd imagine that this being the first one since COVID kind of ended and the world getting back to quote-unquote normal, people would be eager to get out and just be a part of something like this.
Yeah, I really hope so. We'll see in a month. It's May 31st and June 1st. But the response that we've received to date is really encouraging. Schools are bringing groups of students from 30 or 40 to 120. So there's that, and that's an excellent learning opportunity for those students. On the inclusion side, diversity for sure. And municipalities too. So they are all bringing staff to participate in this. And we're going to make it fun for them too. There's some fun and friendly activity challenges. So they'll get a chance to try city volleyball and wheelchair basketball and some others. So, yeah, you know, when you host a party, you always worry a little bit of who's coming. But I think we have those bases covered with a pretty robust promotional campaign launching next week, actually.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
That was a pleasure, Cam. Thanks.
My pleasure. Thanks.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Blood donors are needed now as much as ever. If you would like to help meet the needs of patients across Canada, please consider booking an appointment by calling 1-800-2-DONATE. That is 1-800-236-6283, or by visiting blood.ca or through the Give Blood app. The Windsor Blood Donation Centre location is at 3909 Grand Maris Road East. Make a difference with the Canadian Blood Services.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA Windsor on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard a little bit about Jess Lewis's latest Paralympic training, and Jeff Thiessen told us a little bit at an upcoming Parasport Festival.
In this segment of our show, Dave Harshaw will be giving us an update on the Tetra Society. So what's the latest with your work with Tetra?
Pardon me? What's the latest?
Yes.
I did totally voice controlled home. Anything that you would touch with your hands, you could use your voice for. Right down to TV remotes, and I had a sensor to his chair so the system knew where he was. It would open his door for him when he went up to it. It would turn lights on in the bathroom when he went into the bathroom. And he could do fans and televisions and kitchen lights and all that stuff.
So, what were some of the challenges in creating this fully accessible home?
Mostly programming. Like programming the voice responses. Took me almost 3 weeks. And the guy couldn't use his hands at all, so we got it all done. Then I went back to his house later and I asked him, well, do you really use all this stuff? And he went, oh yeah. And he used it all. He could leave his apartment on its own. he used to have to ask for a worker to come and hold his door open, and not anymore, and now it's open for him. So that was my favorite region one. And I did two of those doors. I did somebody that had a talk box, and I had to program the talk box to open the front door. And that also was successful.
So, in that sense, I'm guessing that it's programmed to their specific voice, so not just anyone could make use of it.
Right, you have to make a secret word for your door. So you say, turn on the, whatever your secret word is, it might be, turn on the orange tree, and the door will open. So it was hard to program, and then hard to get him to use it because he didn't know how to use it. So I gave him lessons on how to use it, and once he got it, he got it. He was good.
So, do you find that when Tetra creates something like this, it's creating a sense of greater dignity and self-sufficiency for those?
I have a little stronger feelings about that than what you just said. My feeling is that if you put somebody in an apartment and they cannot go through their own door on their own, there's a problem. Because could she open her door on her own? She could just leave if there was a fire or something going on. So what my goal is to try and do as many apartments as I can for the people that can't use the remotes.
So how does Tetra go about reaching out to those who might need their services?
Just on the Tetra website. Just go to the Tetra website. TetraSociety.org, and then it's usually word of mouth. Like, I know a lot of people, and a lot of coordinators are connected with therapists and stuff. So it's mainly just through projects that we've done. So that's the biggest thing. Mostly the therapists.
So what are some of the advantages of having a fully automated home, for example?
You don't need to use your hands, just your voice. If you fell out of bed, you could still open your door. You wouldn't need a remote. excuse me, the one gentleman that couldn't use his hands, it was an advantage for him because he could now do everything. You know, and there's a lot of people that just can't deal with a lot of that switches and stuff. So we added smart switches to normal places where there's normal light switches. And it made them way more easier to use. Like, one person couldn't even turn their kitchen light on. They couldn't reach the switch.
Slide
so, about. Just to bring everything in closer and make it equal so that they can use it is my goal.
So, when it comes to systems like these, do you ever get called in if someone has a concern? Something's not working right, or they need a little more clarification. Do you keep in contact with those you support?
Of course, they can always call me. I always leave them with a card and say, any issues or problems, just call me. And then I'll go out there and make sure that it's still working properly, or maybe it needs to be tweaked a little bit. But so far, I haven't had that. So far, everyone I did the smart stuff for seems to use it and use it well. I also make, like, drop-on tables for your power chairs and cup holders and pretty much whatever you can think of that you can't buy, I can usually make.
So, do you have any projects on the horizon? Something you're working on or would like to develop?
I have all kinds of grab bars for a kid. I have a ride-on toy that needs to be modified for a younger child. There's a bunch. I've got 10 on the go right now. And I have 2 people, so it's tough. I did a lot of cup holders. Like, there's one of them on the go, too. There's another one for one of those really nice tables that you can put on, put your laptop in your lap and mouse and stuff. As for smart stuff, right now there's nothing smart, but that doesn't matter either way. Like, I don't mind doing the cup holders and the tables and all that stuff.
So, what types of disabilities and accommodation needs do you most commonly see in your design efforts?
Usually MS, I do stuff for people with MS because they get tired out really easy. And a lot of people with worse CP, like class 1s, I see a lot of that because there's a lot they can't do. So anything you give them that they can now do, it might be one thing, is like giving them the world. Geez, now I can turn the light on, or I can open the door, or I can do this, or I can do that. There's all different types of people that come. So it's hard to say which disability would use Tetra the most. Pretty much everyone does.
Well, it's probably the best way, having it across the spectrum. What's in the
Yeah, it doesn't really matter to us what your disability is. It's nice to know, like when you fill out your forms and stuff, it's nice to know.
Well, that would also seem to have the advantage of allowing for changing needs if the condition progresses and they might need something down the road.
Right, that's the stuff that I like because I can go out and redo something that I've done already. And usually it's a small change, or I've had them where the project just didn't work out, it just didn't work. And then you go back to the drawing board and you start over until you get a project that does work. So when you go to Tetra, you don't just go once, you can go as many times as you want. Once you're on the list, then you're allowed to call, and if you have another issue, then I'll go out again, and I'll look at it again. Now, can you put a request out? I need volunteers. Like, I usually have volunteers help me with projects. So I am on the lookout for people that might want to volunteer for the organization.
So, where can people go to sign up for that?
They can go to Tetra's website again, and then just go to the Windsor chapter. So, yeah, so that's usually how people do it. It's tetrasociety.org.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. My friends, the truth is, in disability life, creativity is never to be underestimated. Whether it be someone's need to invent something new, or to find a new way of participating in sport, fact is, a person with a disability is driven by necessity. The necessity of doing what they love, being a part of the community. I maintain that it's not just a right, but it is a duty of every person with a disability to be a part of what's going on out there. It's been said of people with disabilities that they can do anything anyone else can, simply a question of how. Now, we as a society need to keep an open mind. If something doesn't exist yet, invent it. Add something to the substance of the landscape of disability life. If someone says you couldn't do that because of your condition, it's up to you to prove whether it's possible. And I maintain, even if it proves challenging at first, or seemingly insurmountable, if you keep taking steps, if you keep making progress in that direction, eventually you'll achieve more than you ever thought yourself capable of. Jess Lewis said a while back that even though in her last attempt she didn't quite get a medal, she did beat her own best time, and she did improve. I so admire and respect that statement. And so much as we can't expect instant results. We can't say to the world, just because I have a disability, you have to change everything for me. Fact is, we are our own agents of change. With reason and with wisdom, with creativity, people with disabilities can pave the way to a better future. The truth is, a lot of people expect instant gratification. They want instant results. You gotta remember, the quote-unquote able-bodied of society live in this world too. And their needs are just as important. Therefore, by working together, we can arrive at a solution that works for everybody. But the fact is, our communities are stronger as a united presence, not any group saying, I should be the only consideration. For people with disabilities, that does not mean they should be given less consideration by the same token. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.